Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, a symposium of scientists and religious leaders comes to a close up in a glacier off the west coast of Greenland. Discovering the face of Christ in even the most hardened criminals, the International Commission of Catholic Prison Pastoral Care looks at ways of upholding the dignity of those behind bars. But first, Pope Benedict returns to Rome to hold his Wednesday General Audience. Welcome to the programme. Pope Benedict met with thousands of pilgrims and visitors gathered on Wednesday for his first general audience since returning from his three-day pilgrimage to Austria. Since he returned from Vienna on Sunday night, the Pope has been staying in his summer residence at Castel Gandolfo, south of Rome. But on Wednesday, he was greeted enthusiastically by cheering crowds as he arrived in St. Peter's Square, as my colleague Charles Collins reports.
Returning to St. Peter's Square after a summer of holding audiences in the Paul VI Audience Hall, Pope Benedict spoke about his apostolic voyage to Austria this Wednesday.
Dear brothers and sisters, my recent pastoral visit to Austria was above all a pilgrimage to the Shrine of Mariazell on its 850th anniversary. The venerable statue of Our Lady, pointing to her infant son, inspired the theme of the visit, to look to Christ. Austria is a land of ancient Christian culture, and its capital, Vienna, is today a center of international institutions. In my meeting with the President and the diplomatic corps, I expressed the Church's support for global efforts to foster peace and authentic development, and I anchored the process of Europe's unification on the basis of values inspired by its shared Christian heritage. At Mass in St. Stephen's Cathedral, I stress the importance of respecting the rich religious and cultural meaning of our tradition of Sunday rest. While visiting Heiligenkreuz Abbey, I spoke of the value of monasticism and liturgical prayer and the inseparable link between theology and the spiritual life.
The Pope also spoke about the volunteers he encountered.
At the end of my journey, I met with representatives of Austria's impressive network of volunteer organizations and expressed appreciation for the generosity to others. Throughout my visit, I saw the vitality of the Church, which in today's Europe is called to look to Christ, even you, as she carries out her mission in service of the gospel and the true progress of the human family.
After the audience, the Pope blessed the crowd and returned to Castel Gandolfo, where he's currently residing.
And my thanks to Charles Collins for that report on Pope Benedict's weekly general audience. The west coast of Greenland, far up in the frozen Arctic region, was the spectacular setting last week for a symposium of scientists, religious leaders and dignitaries concerned with the impact of environmental changes. Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I, the spiritual leader of the Orthodox world and well known for his green credentials, brought together Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist and Shinto delegates for the six-day symposium on board a ship, travelling through the Ilulissat Glacier, a World Heritage Site now under threat from global warming. The meeting included a moment of silent prayer for the future of the planet, music from local Inuit inhabitants, and presentations from scientists monitoring closely the impact of climate change on this most isolated region. My colleague Tracy McClure takes a closer look.
The meeting is hosted by Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I and brings together nearly 200 scientists, theologians, and government officials in Greenland to speak about environmental issues. Greenland is home to some of the largest glaciers in the world, many of which are melting at an unprecedented rate. Pope Benedict sent a message to the group calling for greater care for the environment. He also sent a personal representative, Cardinal Theodore McCarrick.
I believe that when the Holy Father wanted one of us to be there as his representative, it made it very clear that Pope Benedict XVI is very much interested in doing his best and in the Catholic Church doing her best in helping to work together with all the world to find a remedy to the increasingly difficult and dangerous problem of ecology. This program, which has been initiated by the Ecumenical Patriarch, Bartholomew I, is a very important one. And the Holy Father has constantly, and his predecessor also constantly, made it clear that the Catholic Church is very determined to be part of the solution to this problem. And I think that this present meeting here in the Arctic Sea has been a sign of the Holy Father's desire to be here in spirit and in representation.
The Polar Pilgrimage into the Arctic is part of a week-long symposium put on by the Greek-based organization Religion, Science, and the Environment. It is their seventh symposium and covers environmental issues related to the Arctic.
There are many different changes that are occurring. The most dramatic changes are changes in the extent of sea ice, in the mass balance, in other words, the volume of ice in the glaciers.
Terry Callaghan is director of the Abisko Scientific Research Station in Sweden.
The local people do not contribute very much to climate change, so it doesn't matter how efficient they are with energy, it still will not have a global impact. So these people have to adapt to the changes they will see, and they have to think about new ways of coping with changes in sea level and the erosion along the coast, where villages are built along the coast, they have to move. And people have to think about the land in a new way. And this will have major implications for the Arctic indigenous peoples because they have a particular culture that has evolved over many hundreds of years. And they will have to face big challenges of maybe relying on different foods, different ways of living, different ways of hunting. Those are the negative aspects. There are also some opportunities too. So as the sea ice retreats in summer, then ships will be able to navigate Arctic waters and access new reserves of oil and gas. So there will be the opportunities of increased resources that can be used, and also better transportation routes from Europe to China and Japan. But all those bring risks with them, and we have to plan very carefully to avoid any problems arising from these opportunities.
Cardinal McCarrick says the citizens of the world must do more to help the environment.
If all the great religions of the world get together and say to our political leaders and to our people, we must do something about this, it becomes very, very important. And the good part is that the religious leaders seem to be very much united in calling for the preservation of this great gift that the Creator, our loving Father, has given us all. And the fact that we are working on it together is the real key. And I think the Holy Father sees that, and it's for that reason that he has made it clear that he supports this initiative of Patriarch Bartholomew and wants the Catholic Church to play a role with the other religious groups in striving to find the way to preserve this great gift that our Heavenly Father has given us, and to strive to end the degradation of the ecology and the possible creation of terrible problems for the world in future generations.
The theologians at the symposium will make recommendations, which will be addressed at another meeting coming up in December.
My thanks to Tracy McClure reporting there. discover the face of Christ in every prisoner. That was the theme of the 12th World Congress of the International Commission of Catholic Prison Pastoral Care, which met here in Rome recently to discuss new ways of supporting the 9 million people imprisoned in countries around the world. The week-long Congress brought together prison chaplains, assistants and volunteers from over 60 countries and included an audience with Pope Benedict, who called their ministry one of patience and perseverance.
I am confident that your Congress will provide an opportunity to share your experiences of the mysterious countenance of Christ shining through the faces of the imprisoned. I encourage you in your efforts to show that fast to the world as you promote greater respect for the dignity of the detained. Finally, I pray that your Congress will be an occasion for you, yourselves, to appreciate anew how, in attending to the needs of the imprisoned, your own eyes are opened to the marvels God does for you each day.
There are more than 9 million people in prison worldwide, and this number is growing every year. So it's really a great concern and a great challenge for prison chaplains.
Dr. Christian Kuhn is the former president of the International Commission. He gave me a global perspective of the work of its members, ministering to prisoners in very different conditions, depending on the different countries where they work.
Life in prison is hard for everyone, but it might not be the same whether you are in prison in a Scandinavian country or in an African or Asian one. Prison chaplains face many challenges. It may start with assist prisoners for pure survival in terms of having enough food and or medical care, etc. But it also ends up, but it's our main mission, of course, to help them with a spiritual assistance to proclaim the good message, the good news, but also to have works of misericordy to the prisoners.
Let's take a look at your own country, for example, Austria, a country where one assumes that the rights and the dignity of prisoners is quite well respected. Is that the case or not?
Compared to most of the other countries worldwide, you can say this. But as your previous question already emphasized, the situation quite varies from continent to continent or even country to country. Generally, prison is a sort of common answer to many social problems which are not solved or cannot be solved in the forefield. Of course, you have some hardcore criminals who are definitely on their way to this criminal behavior, but in fact, this is almost a minority of prison population. The majority are people who could not deal in a proper way with social problems or challenges. And since you were speaking about Austria, and the same applies for many European countries, prison systems today also are very much affected by the migration problem. In Austria, for example, half or even more than half of prisoners in pre-trial detention are foreigners. The same applies for many other European countries. All over Europe, more than 100,000 foreigners are imprisoned. Of course, not all of them, or even a small minority, may be hardcore criminals, but those are migrants who end up in prison, often due to lack of alternatives.
All the prisons are overcrowded, and particularly the prison in which I work now, it was meant for 900 people, but there are 3,500 of them there now.
Sister Jackie Atabong from Cameroon started doing prison ministry as a young novice and has been working in jails as a volunteer for the past 20 years.
Many of them have to sleep on the floor in the open air. They don't have food, they don't have medical care, so we don't just take care of their religious aspect, but we take care of holistically, we have to take care of them. We do consultations every week, medical consultations, sometimes we write projects, like the British Embassy helped us to build a shed and beds for prisoners. Missio and the Conrad Hilton sisters helped us to start some rehabilitation centers in the prison where we train prisoners. We work with the minors, we work with women, And recently, the Italian Bishops' Conference also helped us to build a rehabilitation center for ex-prisoners, where we welcome those who we have trained in the prison into that center and help them to resettle back into the community.
What would you say most prisoners, the majority of people you're dealing with, what sort of crimes are they in jail for?
Most of them are for theft. And I would think most of them are there because of social injustice. They want to leave and they don't have the means to do it and they steal. And many of them also have been victims of dysfunctional families. They weren't brought up, they've had to live with one parent, and sometimes the parent can't provide for all their needs, and, you know, they have character deficiencies and they find themselves with gangs and into crime.
Many of these, I imagine, would be quite young men particularly, wouldn't they?
Yes, most of our prisoners are between 15 and 45.
And conditions, as you say, in these jails must be extremely difficult. I imagine they face problems of violence, perhaps sexual abuse.
Yes, there are some prisoners who face problems with sexual abuse. There's a high rate of homosexuality coming in now, and that also causes the spread of AIDS in the prison, and it's a very difficult thing to handle. The other kinds of violence, because the space is too small to accommodate the amount, number of people, so there's so much aggression, even in the air, struggling to survive.
What kind of advice, counselling, what kind of help can you give to these people?
Since we have a rehabilitation centre, we have trained for the past, it's been on for about 4 years now, we've trained more than 50 prisoners who have passed through our hands, some have left the prison, and during the time we work with them, we have them as family. So we talk with them, we share their lives with them, we just help them to realise that we are part of their lives, and they get to realise that they know we are for them. We do consultations every week, and so medical consultations, so they know we are for them. And we have retreats sometimes in the prison. We have other programs like restorative justice. And during this period, we have time to talk with them in a one-to-one basis. Sometimes we have Christmas parties for prisoners' children, because in our prison, children below 14 are not allowed to enter the prison. So women and men who are there usually don't see their children if they are below 14. So at Christmas, we have a Christmas party. We ask parishioners or Christians, we give them little invitations. We say, make a child happy. When you are preparing for your Christmas for your children, you prepare for a prisoner's child. We give them their age, their size, their class. And when they prepare these gifts, we get a special permission for the prisoners whose children are going to come, and we meet in a special place, and they are able to exchange gifts, and they are able to see mostly with women, they're able to see their children. And it is, you know, it is a healing process that happens. And during this time, when we are preparing all this, we talk with the women, we talk with the children, you know, we try to create this link with them. And it's in those kind of instances that we counsel them and talk with them, because we don't have the structures also in our prison. Sometimes we don't have a space even to sit and talk with them. It is a very difficult prison. It is a high security prison, and the conditions are so bad, so they're afraid the children will be traumatized. And in so doing, the children are not allowed into the prison. So if a woman is in prison for 1 year, she wouldn't see her child for that year. And this Christmas party is a period which we try to help them to meet the children. It is very touching, because the children are so happy to see their mothers, and they are crying. Some of the mothers are crying, but they also always look forward to that, because it gives them an opportunity to see their children.
What about you as a minister doing this job, as you say, which can be very tough, very challenging? You must feel sometimes that you're fighting a losing battle, don't you, against this increasingly high number of people behind bars?
Yes, it is a very tough job, but I don't really feel that I'm fighting a losing battle, because I see change. Not so many of them change, but maybe one or two or three. But it is very encouraging for me. It is very challenging, because they are all criminals. They are stubborn boys. They are tough guys. And it's strange. We are just like two sisters working in the prison, and you see us two young women in the midst of 3,000 men. But they protect us so much, because they've come to realize we are for them. So when we come into the prison, they are the ones, there's no guard with us. They protect us. They know, and they call me, I'm older than the other sister who works with me, so they called me Grand Mère, and they called her La Mère. No, they say, It's a French prison. So they call me grandmother and they call the other sister mother because they know we are the ones who take care of them. We are a mother to them. They sometimes, they don't understand us, or sometimes they are rough. Sometimes they're not understanding. Oh, sometimes they are difficult. So sometimes you go to prison, you feel like crying before going out of it because you're trying to help them all the time. But sometimes they don't understand that you're trying to help them. They want to be tough on you. They say, oh, we are not going to work today. If you don't give us this, we are not going to do it. So sometimes they're tough on us. But it is when we see a change, it is very, very encouraging. I know there is a boy we are very happy with. He has been in prison 3 times. This is his 3rd imprisonment. And when he joined us 4 years ago, he started working in our workshop. Then he acquired skills, and he has changed a lot. He is one of those now who advises others in prison. He was the wildest of the boys in the prison, but he advises others. On the 15th of August, he was baptized. He's going to leave prison on the 10th of October, and he's getting ready to meet us in the rehabilitation center. And he has no other person as family but us. And there is so much change in his life that he alone encourages me to do anything I want to do. Because when I see that somebody who was a real criminal and everybody knows him, see him change openly and really makes an effort to change, it is very encouraging for us.
Most of the women I work with are in for drugs, but for drug trafficking, but on a very small scale. The women I work with aren't even drug users or drug addicts, but they do that, well, just to survive, because they have 2 or 3 kids, the man's gone, so what do? They just handle drugs, I mean, very small quantities, and they get very heavy penalties for that. I mean, they get 15 years, 20 years.
Dr. Van der Mat is a lay chaplain working in a women's prison in southern Peru. And for several years, he served as coordinator for the Latin American region.
Most of them have their family. So we try to contact the family and, well, to help them to maintain contact with the lady, just to prevent that. But, well, we have moments of depression, of course, because I've just had a lady who went in 13 years ago, and now she's out. And, well, she hasn't seen her kids grow up, so now she comes back home and she's like an aunt or somebody, but strange to her own kids. So that's the kind of problems which are quite difficult to resolve.
So what kind of help, what kind of approach do you take to these people?
We do, well, I would say a lot of things, but first of all, we have the liturgical and catechetical, can you say that, mm-hmm. like that,
yes.
part. So we have a celebration every Sunday. We have Bible reflection. The main themes in the liturgical year are worked with them. So we have Bible working, etc. That's one part. The second part is the social part. So we try to contact their family or their friends. We have a radio program since more than 10 years, which is a weekly program where they, the inmates from the women's and the men's prison, can send their letters to salute their families, etc. And their families can call. So the inmates can hear their family's voice on the phone. I mean, the kids can call and say hello to their mother, etc., which is rather important because many people live far away from prison, and they can't just afford to come every week or every month. So they can call, even from, we had foreigners in prison, so they called from Argentina, from Brazil, from Spain once. So that's a very important contact they can make. So prisoners in prison have their radio, so they know that at that time, at Wednesday evening, from 9 to 11 p.m., they can listen to the program, they hear their music, they hear the notes they send or the letters they send, and they can also hear their families. And as the radio is on internet, so even in Germany or Austria, we have a chaplain who is now in Austria. Well, he calls regularly at 4 o'clock in the morning for him. But he calls to give his regards and to salute the people. So that's the social part. Then we have some medical help because now, for example, we have 2 terminally ill ladies with cancer. And, well, we try to find the anesthetics for their pain.
And then there's the cultural part. Every week we visit them also with our team to do some sport or to think about things out of the prison. So that's about what we try to do.
What about conditions for these people? What kind of conditions are they in? How difficult is life for them?
Well, the prison is a bit overcrowded, but we are on the lucky side because we have maybe a 20 or 25% overcrowding percentage. In other prisons in Peru, in the men's prison especially, we get up to 400 or 500%, which is hell. I mean, if a prison in Lima has been made for 1,400 inmates, now there are more than 9,000. So you can imagine that there's no control, there's nothing.
And in a number of Latin American countries, we've seen these kind of conditions ending in serious rioting, really bad problems.
Yes, well, if you have overcrowding, you have a struggle for power, drugs, money, well, all the problems you can imagine. And normally the problem is so huge that even the state cannot solve it. So everybody tries to save his soul as he can. So on that part, we are nearly lucky. The food is not too bad. It's not good, but it's not too bad. You can live on it. The medical care is a bit precarious because it's sometimes difficult to get a doctor or to get to the doctor. And medicine is rather absent, to say the least. But in general, conditions, I think, are, humanely speaking, better than in Europe because people are together. They're not in their cell, but during the day they're all together, so they can talk, they can interchange. The families are allowed to have physical contacts with the inmates, which makes it very different from European cell system where you are 24 hours in the cell and you just get out for your walk for half an hour or for an hour. So from that point of view, it's a rather humane system.
Support do you get from the church for this ministry that you're doing?
Well, as well on the national as on the local level, it is very difficult to convince the bishop that is where we have to be. I understand that bishops have a lot of problems when they have a lack of priests and religious people and everything. But, I mean, from my point of view, when Jesus said that, well, I was in prison and you visited me, well, that's a clear indication of what we have to do. So I hope now with the fifth Salem conference, which has just we just had in May in Aparecida, there are four paragraphs on prison pastoral care, on prison ministry. And that's the first time in the whole life of Salem that we have a document which of that level, which mentions prison pastoral ministry. I understand that Pope Benedict XVI also has part of his heart in prison pastoral care, because in his document on Eucharist, he's calling on two bishops to provide Eucharist to the prisoners, specifically to these people. And I think these are documents from the Pope and from the Salem Conference, which can help us, I hope, to convince our bishops.
Everybody, just as we are human and people tend to not want to have them in the society, so too the church has also kept them away without thinking of it. But we all forget that Christ said, I was in prison and you visited me. It is a call, it's a mandate, it's what Christ asked us to do.
And my thanks there to Dr. Bruno van der Mat, Sister Jackie Atterbong, and Dr. Christian Kuhn, all taking part in the 12th World Congress of the International Commission of Catholic Prison Pastoral Care. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.